This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vashon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vashon.
And that, friends of the Brown Briefly, Islanders all, that was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Every week, we try to live up to his high standards of hosting a discussion of current events laced with empathy, intelligence, humor, and my favorite, progressive persuasion. Brian's concept of less is more, more or less, always left us wanting more. So let's jump right in. We have friends, old and new, young and old. And let's start out with, in no particular order, Vashon Airport Commissioner, West Texas devotee, former Army Intelligence Officer and High Altitude Advocate Truman O'Brien. Good morning, Truman.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here.
Good. You have a very resonant voice this morning.
Thank you. My captain's voice.
Awesome. You should probably give us a line. What would a captain say about right now on the flight?
Welcome aboard, ladies and gentlemen. We are just preparing for takeoff here at the Brown Briefly. I've done that a few times.
Fantastic. All right. So, hey, I would normally, other than the fact Truman is zooming in from home, I'd normally say seated to Truman's left, his wingman and airplane co-owner, mediator, arbitrator, and vintage European sports car enthusiast is Craig Bellis. And, hey, Craig, I was going to ask, as Truman's wingman, wouldn't you normally be sitting to the right of Truman?
I would, but I try not to. That was the last time I was sitting to the right of Truman, we crashed. Yeah, I'll speak in my wingman voice.
All right, it's good to hear how how that works out in real life. All right, hey, we are waiting to see if the skipper of the Vashon, Guardian of the Galaxy, Bruce Hallman, is going to zoom in from Australia in the underside of the world or the upper side of the world if you happen to live there, but we'll see. We'll see how that goes. This week, we are also joined by Small Talk guests Abel Eckhart and Tom Dean. Good morning, Abel.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Tom, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having us.
Looking forward to having this great conversation with you guys. Let's see. I'm Kevin Jones, Indivisible Vashon and the Vashon Climate Action Group, who through the power and tolerance of the Vashon Maury Community Council is currently striving to build support for our legislative outcomes and the legislative outcomes of 8 fellow island environment and climate organizations. So if you haven't had a chance to tune in to the Vashon Maury Community Council and moving that agenda forward, check it out and make sure to be planning to attend the meeting on the 16th of February. All right. So why don't we dive right in and see how things are going on Vashon. Truman, why don't you get us started?
I've had a very exciting week. 2 weeks ago, I was in the studio with Captain Joe, and although I'm not blaming him for this, but a few days later, I came down with a really nasty upper respiratory thing. He was diagnosed with RSV, and I'm suspecting that that's what I've got, but I am greatly improved, and I can report that the back is doing wonderful after a year of being in pain. I am virtually pain-free right now. We'll see how that lasts, but that's the medical report from my end of the island.
All right. And just to prove that correlation does not imply causation, RSV was probably not the reason your back is feeling better today.
That is true. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Just want to confirm that.
Yeah.
Hey, Craig, how's your week been going?
It's been going rather well. It's funny. Every week we ask that question. And every week, because of my age, I think, I have to look at my calendar to remember what it is I did the preceding week. It turns out I did a lot of things. I had a bunch of arbitration hearings that I conducted. I've been working on the airplane, doing the annual. Got to take it all apart like Truman did last year when I was under the weather, and I'm doing this year because Truman's under the weather. Went to a Robbie Burns dinner at a friend's house and cut the haggis and toasted with a little whiskey. Went to a wake at the Central Tavern in Seattle to honor an old friend and part owner of the Central, and saw the Elvis movie this week, which I've been dying to see, and I enjoyed it very much, especially since I've been spending so much time on the Thursday Morning Scramble talking about Sun Records and the roots of rock and roll. So that's what I've been up to.
Hey, hey. All right. Yeah, busy week, that's for sure. Abel, why don't you give us some insight into how your week has been?
My week has been good. This is the first full week back to work since mid-December, so I feel like I'm kind of getting back in the hang of things, and like time is kind of slowing down a little bit after the holidays, so it feels good.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, hopefully this Brown Briefly will be a nice slow ramp up to full engagement with the Land Trust. Tom, good morning. Good to see you, and how's your week been?
Oh, it's been great if you like working on taxes. You know, it's that time of year.
My fave. Well, but thank you for the reminder, because, you know, that's something you don't want to be late. It's a public service announcement to our Brown Briefly listeners. Thanks,
hard.
Tom.
Oh, boy.
And so I'm glad to see you're surviving it so far.
I'm still kicking.
Hey, I'll report that I'm actually going to probably get my deck remodel project done before the 2-year mark. I'm just now working on the base moldings around the porch rail posts. And if you could see here in my den, which is the cold season shop, I just moved the 44 odd bits of molding that I created out of harvested alder from my own property here. I moved them out to the shop to be nailed together. So
nice.
Things are going good on that. Yeah, it's been a enjoyable project, and thankfully most people think it looks pretty good.
So, cool.
Well done.
All right. Well. All right. With no more dilly dallying around, let's jump right into small talk. And I would say that, you know, I know it from my perch here on the south end of the island, surrounded by nature. Many people agree with me. It's like we live in a park here on Vashon Mori Island. And the Vashon Mori Island Land Trust, I believe, has a lot to do with that. So thank you, Abel Eckhart and Tom Dean, for joining us today on Small Talk. Yeah. I would like to get right into it and say, let's start, Tom, with you. You know, Tom, you have been with the Land Trust ever since I've known about the Land Trust. So when did you get started, and what is the biggest highlight of your time with the Land Trust so far?
So I come from the previous century. I first joined the board of the Land Trust in 1998, and then had an opportunity to join the staff in 2003, and have been there ever since. So it's been a long time. It's been a great run, and I'm still really excited about what we do at the Land Trust. So in that time I've seen a lot of projects go by. It's hard to pick a highlight. It would be easy to pick Fisher Pond being our first big project. It would be easy to pick the Glacier Gravel Pit being our most high profile project. But I think for me, the highlight of my career has been Island Center Forest. It was a project, I think, where we really saw what this island could accomplish, and it was a project that brought basically, you know, a sort of a central park right into town where people live, and it was a project that really highlighted for us the importance of the rest of Judd Creek, which we then went on to tackle after Island Center Forest, being the headwaters of Judd Creek, our largest creek.
Nice. Yeah, definitely setting the tone for future things that have happened since then. So that sounds awesome. Abel, tell us when and how you got involved with the Land Trust.
Well, I got involved with the Land Trust when I moved to the island in 98. And I was volunteering as a steward for the shingle mill properties at the time, 98, 99, and volunteered for 4 years. And then when my son was born, I chose to stop commuting to Seattle and work on island. And it just kind of correlated with the land trust hiring a stewardship position for half time. So that was in 2004. So I've been here a good long haul as well.
All right. Well, you mentioned the fact that you are involved with stewardship. In fact, you're the stewardship director. What are the responsibilities of a stewardship director?
So pretty much all the real interest property that we have is my domain. Like, I manage all the property, the restoration projects, the buildings and structures, contractors that we have working on the lands. And then we hire a internship crew in the summertime, well, for 6 months, so spring through fall, and they help us out with maintenance, trail building, trail maintenance, restoration projects. So it's a multi-layered cake, and you never mm-hmm. know quite, you know, what your week has in store. You know, there's a lot of neighbor relations and, you know, mischief that we have to deal with. So it's mm-hmm. it's varied.
All right. Would you by chance be a primary interface for volunteers who do some of that work also out on the lands?
Yes, although there's Keller who works with me full time. He's our volunteer coordinator. So he's the one that kind of manages all the volunteer projects and volunteers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, Tom, you are the conservation director. Tell us what that work entails.
So, as Abel alluded to, we own some property in fee. We have conservation easements. So we use different tools when it comes to conserving land. And in terms of planning, I like to think of the island in three different ways in terms of its habitats and what we're trying to preserve. The first is shorelines. Those are obviously important for salmon. Most of the work we've done on shoreline has been related to restoring habitat for Chinook, which is the only, that we know of, endangered species that actually touches Vashon Island. But also, you know, increasingly working on flooding issues. I'm working, volunteering with King County right now to develop a new flood management plan. A flood risk management plan. Vashon doesn't currently have any flood program. There's no one to call. There's, you know, there's a little bit of a void there. And as you saw last December 27th, it's going to increasingly be an issue on Vashon, coastal flooding in particular. So shorelines, that's one area I work on. Creeks is the other, and this is an area where the land trust really takes the lead in our partnership with King County. We own a lot of land in Shingle Mill and in Judd Creek. We just did our first acquisitions in Tahlequah Creek, which we're really excited to get going on that. And we actually, some of our very first projects were done in Christensen Creek. We're renewing our efforts there. So that's what I call the Four Creeks campaign. Those being sort of the four biggest, most important, most intact creeks that we have. Go ahead, Truman.
Yeah, excuse me. The question I had was several years ago, a new culvert was put in on 204th on the upper waters of Judd Creek. And I'm wondering, was that something that you guys were involved in with King County?
Do you want to take that, Abel?
We were involved to some degree, but that was King County really took the lead on fish passage in Judd Creek, you know, so it was kind of us, you know, prodding them to some degree and helping them do the initial surveys of the creeks. But King County by far is, you know, taken on the fish passage barriers throughout primarily just Judd Creek.
Yeah. And were there other...
Abel's being modest. I mean, he's done a lot of work putting logs in Judd Creek for salmon habitat, replanting riparian corridors, you know, creating shade, creating food, getting rid of weeds, et cetera. And Vashon Nature Center has been monitoring fish returns on our creeks for 10 years now, and we had one of our best years ever. For whatever reason, I credit Abel, but you know, I can't prove that.
Single-handedly bringing the fish back.
I do have one more comment, and that was speaking of doing the logs. Several years ago, I was on the board at the Vashon Forest Stewards, and I know, Abel, we were working with you when we moved a number of stumps and logs up into Shingle Mill using our log truck. And boy, that was a very interesting project. And I thought at the time, what in the heck are you guys thinking about putting all this junk in this creek, you know? But it begins to make sense, and I assume it's working in Shingle Mill.
We had some really good returns in Shingle Mill as well this winter.
Yeah, and you know, the processes that we're trying to kind of rebuild take time to establish, you know. So you might not see anything for years, but you know what it looks like in Shingle Mill is the whole upper stretch where we placed all that wood. The channel is starting to stabilize a little bit more, which creates, you know, more viable spawning areas for the salmon. So,
and I have one more comment, and that is, Tom, I'm going to have to contradict you a little bit. That the first big project wasn't Fisher Pond; it was actually Fern Cove, and that happened in 1994. I was elected to a park commissioner in 1994, and the very first project that we worked on was taking over the ownership of Fern Cove. And working in contract with the land trust to manage that. And it was very, very interesting process and a good one, I think.
Well, you know, Truman, you mentioned before the show that you're also involved with the Parks District and how the Parks District and the land trust work together in some cases, but they have different goals and objectives. Maybe we can do a quick compare and contrast. What does the Park District do? What does the land trust do in general? Yeah. Truman, maybe you want to get started on giving us the idea of the Park District.
Well, the Park District obviously provides outdoor recreation and, recreation in general. I mean, that's what the name of the Park District is. Part of the issue is that some of the grants that were received necessary for the land to be owned by a government entity. So the land trust and the park district came together. Land trust said, look, we've got this wonderful grant, but it's got to be owned by public entity. So would you take over ownership of the land? And that we agreed to do. And that way we were able to get the grant and to purchase the land. But that entailed signing a long-term, a lifetime agreement really with the land trust to be managers of that property. And to my mind, it's been a really excellent collaboration. Tom, you want to take it from the land trust side?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. That law has since been changed. The land trust now has more ability to receive funds directly from the government, but we still rely heavily on our partners at the Park District. And also, increasingly at King County, they have really invested their parks department in Vashon. They now have a dedicated a land manager who only has Vashon in his purview, and they just bought a property that will become their new headquarters. So we're very pleased to also be partnering with King County. You know, you mentioned that early Fern Cove project. The other early project was Maury Marine Park, which the county took on. And so it's really been all three organizations that have worked together ever since we were founded.
Fantastic.
You know, one of the things that occurred, I'm sorry, I can't put a date on it, but the King County Parks was having a really tough time economically. And there were a number of parks there on the island that they were like overpark and never mind. I'll think of the name here in a minute. But anyway, there were several parks that that they actually gave to the park district, Vashon Park District, because they couldn't afford to maintain them anymore. They tried to give us the swimming pool, and we absolutely refused that until we finally ended up. I mean, they finally ended up taking years later. But I find that really interesting, Tom, that the King County is now coming back in and playing a bigger part. That's surprising.
Yeah, but not focused on those facilities that are difficult to maintain, like a swimming pool or a fishing pier. Focused really on backcountry trails, forest projects, shorelines. A lot more natural resource focus with parks now than used to be back in those days.
Kevin,
Craig, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, I would like to jump in for just a moment, just to digress a little bit. Those of us who are steeped in the park district and the land trust and whatnot understand kind of these relationships. But, you know, as I meet people who want to do things with their property and talk about this, that, and the next thing, and I'll mention the land trust to them, and they'll go, I don't understand what the land trust does. I don't understand how it works. I don't know what their jurisdiction, if you will, is. And that's not a simple question, but maybe we can get a fairly simple answer.
Yeah, good luck.
So, we're focused on conserving wildlife habitat, but also providing, you know, opportunities for a passive outdoor recreation like trails. We own a lot of land, like Abel referred to. He's responsible for over 300 acres now of vacant fee-owned land, so that's a lot of responsibility. We jointly own land with private landowners through a tool called the conservation easement, where you basically, you know, split the ownership, and the land trust owns the rights to protect the forest. And then, of course, we, you know, partner with, as we mentioned, other organizations who own land, like the Park District and King County. You know, the interesting thing is, it's all, everything we do is voluntary, right? And the real question is, what about private landowners and what they're doing with their land? We have a lot of people moving to Vashon from the city or from out of this region. Some of them, you know, literally don't know the difference between a Douglas fir and a Western hemlock. how do we, you know, I think going forward, the land trust is struggling with how do we teach people how to take care of their own land? Because we can't buy it all. We can't protect it all.
And a question, Tom, I know the county, or maybe even the state, has the PBRS program. Is that still the public benefit? Is that still viable option?
Yes, that's a very active program. So you can temporarily reduce your property taxes through an agreement with the county. It's a very good tool for people who don't want to go into a permanent conservation situation.
Yeah, and then basically it says that you're going to maintain your forest. And are you guys involved in that at all? Do you have to have an agreement with you guys and all?
We actually have some properties that are enrolled, for instance, at Matsuda Farm, where it's not a straight habitat conservation program. We're enrolled in the agricultural program there.
All right.
Yeah, and I would say, Truman, we steer a lot of people toward PBRS, you know, so in a lot of conversations we have with people, you know, people are always interested in conserving their land and keeping it in a certain way, but if they're not willing to, like, you know, take that step of creating a permanent easement on their property, PBRS is a great solution. So, you know, other than just kind of showing people that option.
And the one aspect of that program that hasn't been mentioned that people are really concerned about is the fact that they can save on their property taxes.
Well, big time.
Yeah. By utilizing that program. So.
And full disclosure, I have an easement, or I've given an easement to the land trust for about 10 feet of my property. I think it maybe it's 5x10 or something. Is that right, Tom?
Yeah, it's actually a trail easement, which is another great tool for us as we try to, you know, hook up different pieces of trail, but don't want to, you know, own certain pieces of land like yours, Truman.
Yeah, but it was a small but mighty easement donation because it allowed us to bring that trail up through there. So that was great.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, that's a perfect segue actually into what I've heard is a long discussed vision to be able to go from the north end to the south end of Vashon by trail. Is that a land trust goal these days, and how's it going?
I would say, you know, we like the idea of a trail going north to south as well. Logistically, it's incredibly complicated just getting all the rights and permissions to run a trail through there. So, you know, we have small blocks of trail that we're trying to piece together, you know, like connecting Island Center Forest to Judd Creek. That's an easier connection to make. But, you know, as I like to think, we're a perpetuity organization. So if it doesn't happen in this 10 years, you know, it might happen in the next 10 years. But I would love to see a bike trail that connects the north to south, something that's safe for people to ride, you know, not just on the shoulder. But as far as walking trails, you know, we're making these small connections, you know, and possibly from Burton to town, you can walk in the next 5 years.
You mean the land trust does not have a right of eminent domain?
Not yet. We're working on it through the legislative process.
Yeah.
I agree with Abel that bike trail north to south, you know, that's really a climate change issue, right? That's a transportation route. That's a way for people to get out of their cars. That's really important. King County spends millions and millions and millions of dollars on regional trails in other parts of the county, and not a dime on Vashon.
Now, are you talking about on your walking trails using those so they'd be multi-use?
No, we're talking about dedicated bike lanes. Yeah, okay. We're also talking about walkable town trails that are multi-use that can be used by bikes, strollers, wheelchairs, etc.
Where do horses fit in?
I was just going to say that. Yeah,
we have spouses who are way into horses. So,
horses. You know, a lot of our big conservation projects do involve multi-use trails that we have protected in perpetuity for horse use. Island Center Forest, Maury Marine Park, the Glacier Pit, Frog Holler, etc. Most of the trail miles on Vashon are horse accessible. The ones that are not are in places where the soil is soft and would be completely ruined by horses, like Judd Creek.
Mm-hmm. And also dangerous for horse riders, you know.
That too.
Steep trails and boardwalks.
Yeah. I can tell you that Island Center Forest, my wife and friend were riding there years ago, and suddenly their horses went nuts, and they thought, what the heck is going on? And as they got closer, they realized there was a pig. Somebody's pig had gotten loose and was in the Island Center Forest and was running down the trail ahead of them. And so the lead horse would see that pig and freak out and have to drop back. And so the other horse would come up and freak out and go back. So anyway, I thought that was kind of an interesting tale of the Island Center Forest.
Hogs gone wild.
Yeah.
On that eminent domain issue, you know, we do now have assembled this Vashon Maury legislative agenda. So maybe we should talk for the 2024 version of the agenda. I'll be in touch. but also, I did want to go ask a question for a person like me who sort of does some wandering around on Vashon. Any advice from folks at the Land Trust when I emerge from the woods on some trail I've not been on before onto some roadway and try to figure out where I am? Then I realize as I turn around to retrace my steps, there's these no trespassing signs. What have I done wrong? And is it okay for me to go back to the way I came? Any comments? Sorry.
I think you stumped us with that one. We're not sure exactly where you've been.
Yeah, we
tend to roam the south end.
We like to throw out a lot of mixed messages with our trails, you know.
Yeah.
Public access, but no trespassing.
I think, Kevin, you should take a GPS device and a lawyer with you.
Yeah, there are nice phone apps now that actually show you where the private property lines are, so that's doable.
Ah, very good. Very good. Yeah, I just kind of go and follow my nose and then try to put the map in my head so when I go back and then avoid those no trespassing signs after I've encountered them. But yeah, thanks for that tip, that wilderness exploration tip. One other thing. What do you consider looking forward? What do you think is the greatest opportunity for the land trust over the next 2 or 3 years?
I'll say one thing and then I'll punt to Abel. When it comes to habitat conservation, size matters, it turns out. And on Vashon, we have about 7 properties in private ownership that are over 70 acres in size. I call them the 7 over 70. That's really where the opportunity lies for having big impact with conservation. I'm curious how Abel would answer this question. I go back to private land ownership. How much opportunity is there in educating private landowners about how to take care of their land?
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I feel like is our big opportunity is inspiring and engaging, you know, private landowners to work on their own property and deal with their own, you know, invasive issues and build better habitat where they can. Because, you know, that ultimately that's our goal, you know, in a lot of ways. And public or private landowners are the largest landowners on the island. So, mm-hmm. And we don't have to do that work.
Invasive species reference has come up now a couple of different times. Tell us more about that and why is that an important focus? Do you think from a conservation perspective, what do landowners need to know and what should they be paying attention to and why should they be concerned about this?
Well, I would say, you know, just in the time that I've been on Vashon, there are certain species, ivy and holly being the two biggest culprits of spreading and getting established in record numbers. And you see this all over King County and maybe the conditions are just right for holly, but a lot of these plants that are bird spread tend to be the biggest problems. And on Vashon, you know, if you take a look, just drive down any road and peer into the forest, you'll see holly with big red berries, and those birds just spread that all over the place. So we've, you know, on some of our properties, we go through every year and we find new germinating holly trees every year. So, you know, having people at least prevent the seed spread via bird would be a great success for this island. You know, we're a finite geography, so it kind of makes us feel like anything is possible.
So just to clarify, is the male and female varieties of the holly different? I mean, the berries, are they only on one?
Yeah, the berries are on the females.
Female.
Yeah, so you can
have... That's more important to remove those, I assume.
Exactly. Yeah. And for ivy, you just have to keep it out of the trees. You know, it doesn't start to flower until it starts to grow up the trees. So, you know, ground ivy is not great. It doesn't provide good habitat, but it also isn't spreading ivy throughout the island.
Are there some other downs? You mentioned habitat just now. Of course, the ivy tends to grow up the trees and they can topple as a result of the additional weight. Holly is not something I would want to go wander through a forest of holly trees unless I wear my Tyvek, you know, explorer outfit. Are there some other downsides to invasive species that we haven't mentioned?
Yeah, tansy ragwort.
Yeah, tansy ragwort can be poisonous to livestock. You know, and there's some, the King County noxious weeds, they have a whole list of class A, class B, class C weeds. And some are just those up-and-coming weeds that they see that will tend to have more of a problem with in the future. So they tend to regulate those a little bit harder to try to stop them from becoming, you know, like an ivy or a holly where it's out of control to the point where they don't, you know, they don't regulate that anymore. Mm-hmm. But in general, you know, like a big stand of blackberry isn't great habitat for a lot of different species. So, you know, removing that and creating a diverse shrub area has a lot more benefits to all the local birds and mammals. And
got it. So for I've heard the challenge of holly removal I've heard that can be quite challenging. I know I've removed half a dozen because I'm surrounded by holly, and I'm in that and the Scotch broom and the Himalayan blackberries. I'm devoted to keeping off of my acreage. What do you tell a landowner who's intent on removing holly? Is there anything they should know in particular about making sure that it does not come back?
Well, I would say, so holly is one of, we use herbicides only for holly and hawthorn and laurel. So those species that are really hard to manually get rid of. And we use, it's called an EasyJect Lance. So it has a little herbicide shell that you inject into the base of the tree, and it, you know, just distributes into the root system, and then that tree dies. So if you have a really large holly problem, that's a great way to go about it. If you're really into the manual method, just repeated cutting over and over again is really the only way to do it. You can dig it up and then just, you know, cut the residual root bits. But there are people on the island that will come and do this EasyJect Lance treatment of herbicides.
What is that called again, Abel?
It's called the EasyJect Lance.
Okay.
And I have heard that some folks at Island Center, I'm sorry, Island Forest Stewards, well, Dave White, is that right?
I think Dave Warren.
Island Dave Center Warren, Forest. Thank you. Thanks for the reminder. I think Dave Warren does some of that work as well. All right. Well, so opportunities, now we talked about that and those 7/70. What do you consider the greatest challenge to overcome that the Land Trust is working to address right now?
Well, I think we're always trying to balance what we can, you know, what we can buy with what we can take care of. So it's relatively easy to find money to acquire land. It's relatively difficult to find the money to take care of it properly. So I think for the Land Trust, we could really use, you know, a dedicated endowment, an endowment that's dedicated to taking care of Vashon. You know, that's, and as you know, that's a huge challenge. Trying to raise that kind of private money is big.
Do you have a maintenance fund? I mean, I assume it's a line item in your budget, but
we have operating funds that we raise annually for stewardship and maintenance. We have a small endowment. It's not adequate to really take care of our needs into the future, or to really even be yet a significant part of our operating budget in terms of interest payment.
If people do want to donate to the Land Trust, can they designate what their gift would go to?
Sure, you can always restrict your gift. You run the risk that we wouldn't accept it. That said, if anybody's interested in talking to me about a three-figure gift to our endowment, I'm happy to have that conversation with you.
You're not going to turn them away.
No, I'm not.
So, speaking of judgment on your part.
Yeah. Speaking of endowments and fundraising in general, what is the essence of your fundraising? Do you have a dedicated fundraiser, or what do you do there?
We have three opportunities for you to give every year. The first is Give Big, the big online fundraising effort. The second is our event at Matsuda Farm, which we call the Party Under the Big Sky. And then third is our year-end appeal, which some people love to give at year-end, and that's how they do it traditionally, through the mail or online.
And to be clear, we'll accept donations anytime throughout the year.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely true.
Good policy.
Today, and don't yesterday, you have the, tomorrow.
Don't you have also the tree and shrub sale? Is that going on right now? Do I understand right?
Yeah, so we're almost at the end of ordering the bare root trees. and tree pickup will be the first Saturday in February.
We had some of the biggest demand for bare root trees this year that we have ever seen. I'm not sure what's going on out there. I guess our message is getting through about, you know, people taking care of their land because people are anxious to plant trees out there.
Hmm. We sold more trees in the first 2 days than we did all last year.
Wow. And what varieties do you sell?
We have 14 different species, and you know, it's a mix of shrubs and trees, but Doug fir, red cedar are always on that list. We threw lodgepole pine in this year, snowberry, red flowering currant, Oregon grape, you know, a lot of the common ones that you see that are actually, you know, fairly easy to get established.
Well, I'm hoping my Gary Oaks, which I bought last year through the sale, are going to do well. I understand they need a pretty clear opening above them. So I've done my best to site them. And there's like 5 vine maples that I planted in and a couple of other shrubs. So I'm looking forward to Nootka Rose. I believe I picked up 5 of those as well.
Nice. Yeah,
so hopefully those will do well this coming summer. So lots going on in terms of land care, education, availability of resources for your property, directing listeners to how they can get involved with various conservation and property tax reduction. How can listeners best get involved with you at the Land Trust? And if, for those who want to get more involved with your work, how do they do that?
We have 2 ongoing volunteer opportunities. Abel and Keller run stewardship work parties Tuesday mornings, 10 to noon. Is that right, Abel?
Yeah.
So anybody's welcome to join in at any time with that. And then later this spring at Matsuda Farm, we'll also be starting up with Volunteer Fridays, also 10 to 12.
I want to just add, my wife's on those work parties, as Abel knows,
and Tom does too.
And she just finds them, you know, a wonderful opportunity, new friends, really feels like she's accomplishing a lot out there. So I think there's a lot of positive feelings about the people who do that.
All right. And should people be dropping into the Land Trust building on Bank Road, or should they be looking on your website or maybe a social media page?
Yes.
Yeah. And
yes, all of the above.
You know, and probably the easiest way for people to like tune in is to just, you know, connect via email and get on our mailing list. Then you see when the volunteer events are. We're also, you know, we're pretty active on, some people are pretty active on Facebook and Instagram, so there's always that outlet as well.
What is your website address?
It's just vachonlandtrust.org.
Okay, and do you have regular meetings that the public can attend at the Land Trust building?
We do not, but we do have ad hoc events that we do occasionally. You'll get an invitation to an open house or First Friday or something like that.
Right. Yep.
Volunteer appreciation event if you're a volunteer, mm-hmm. etc. And like Abel said, our news goes out on email. That's really how most of our members keep in touch with where their donations are going.
All right. Get involved with the Land Trust. Conservation, expanding the park-like world in which we live. Truman, you wanted to add a comment.
Yeah, I just want to commend both these gentlemen for their work here. You know, back when I was the park commissioner back in 94, with that, with the whole, shingle mill, Fern Cove acquisition, the Land Trust, some of the attitude of the Land Trust was that they didn't want anybody to come onto the property, and they were trying to conserve it to the best, you know, the most wild condition. And because of that relationship with the park district, they began opening up the trails and to the public. And I have to tell you that what they've done is brilliant. The opening up of trails and access to Land Trust properties is an excellent thing that they do. And I really need to commend them for that, because I think it gets a lot more community involvement in the Land Trust when they see what the possibilities are of conserving this property. And so thank you for that. And thank you for the maintenance of those trails. They're beautiful, lovely to be on. It's a really a great, great thing. And the other thing is, we've, as a park, as a airport commissioner, I've used ABLE as a resource for, just to help us make decisions about how we manage the property around us. And I really appreciate that. That's been a great benefit to us. And I think the community in general benefits from that relationship. So again, thank you guys. You do a great job at what you're doing.
Thank you, Truman.
Yeah. Thanks, Truman. Yep.
All right. Well, you are certainly welcome to stay on board with the last 15 minutes of the show. We're going to dive into some political matters, but you're invited to speak or just enjoy the show as you choose. But one thing I do want to mention, we've been talking over the course of the last couple of shows about the water level that we're experiencing. I do want to mention that king tides are definitely on the thing right now. Today's high tide at 7:20 a.m. was 13.4 feet, and tomorrow at 8, it was going to be a 13.2-foot tide. Any of the Brieflees or Land Trust folks have a chance to get out there and check out the tides? Any comments?
Try to stay away from the edge of the water these days. No, seriously, it's amazing, the tides. I guess between low pressure, the position of the moon and planets and global warming, we are vulnerable as an island, as are virtually every island in the world. So,
Maury may become separated from Fashion once
they
again.
Will finally be freed.
Yes, yeah. So.
Well, I did take a little tour. Oh, yeah, go ahead, Tom.
Well, I've been putting a lot of thought into this lately. You know, as I mentioned to you, I'm working with the Flood Control District on a new flood management plan and unpacking the numbers a little bit. You know, you think about some of these beach cabins that did get water in them right after Christmas. You know, a lot of these were built 100 years ago. Sea levels have risen 10 inches here in the past 100 years. So, that's not much, but when you combine it with these other effects, low pressure and position of the moon, that's the result that you get. We saw it. It was a bit of a wake-up call, wasn't it?
It was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you get the wind in just the right direction, all of a sudden that's one of those other factors, right? They can pile that water up.
The 27th was very relatively calm. We were in the lee of the Olympics that day. Had we not been those... water could have been 2-3 feet higher in some locations. In the next 60-70 years, the water will be 2 or 3 feet higher.
Well, that lets me dive right into the next topic, which is a little bit of a rant, but I'll try not to make it too crazy. So high tides, I'd say, brought to you in part by our sponsor, Climate Change. Today, Climate Change is joined by our local utility, Puget Sound Energy. So here's the deal. Here's what I mean by that. many of us share this concern about a persistent and in some cases growing oil and gas industry. I heard just the other day that a gas industry executive was bragging that their company hit their peak gas production last year. And I kind of thought, hey, I can kind of actually identify with that as in my age group. But I was thinking maybe since we have this sort of like area of common ground on around gas production, maybe we could actually work together, you know, to find a common solution. So my solution of choice is Beano these days, but I don't know if they make industrial strength. You know, so I don't know. Brief. Anybody want to get involved with suggestions for PSC and reducing their gas use?
Well, one of the things that just happened recently is that the price of gas dropped by more than 50%. And so because of overproduction or oversupply, that in some ways is going to be self-regulating. If you got too much of this stuff, the price is not going to be worth producing it. So, of course, when they go the other direction, then the other thing happens. So
that will help, but I don't have a tremendous amount of faith in self-regulation.
No. No, I don't either.
Yeah, really. I think it's going to take the will of the people.
Well, you know, I started looking into PSE's self-regulation because they do have their what they call their integrated resource plan, which is how they basically deliver energy to us. And what they're doing on this front, you know, first of all, the state has asked utilities to be part of the solution to go away from carbon emitting pollution, for away from climate pollution. And for gas utilities, they've actually asked the gas utilities to cut down to zero by the year 2050. It turns out in Puget Sound Energy's current plan, they are going to cut their gas use by a whopping 18% over the next 22 years. So if you do the math, that's like 0.8% per year, which to me seems sort of infinitesimally slow.
Well, but aren't they replacing their coal with gas? Is that part of the issue?
Well, on the electricity side, they are required to shut down, you know, no coal-based electricity in Washington State by 2025. And by 2030, on the electricity side of their business, they have to be carbon neutral. But this is now the gas side of the business. So their natural gas, you know, their gas pipelines, gas
supply
pipeline network. Okay. Yeah. And so, but nonetheless, you know, the state is telling utilities that we need to move beyond that. So what PSE's plan to do to get to the state mandated, you know, reduction by year 2050 is they plan to buy offsets, carbon allowances, they're called. So in other words, Puget Sound Energy continues to pollute, and literally at our expense, we're not only paying for the carbon allowances that they have to buy through our energy bills, but we're also paying for the carbon pollution through things like sea level rise and heat domes and, of course, wildfire smoke. So just the thing that for our listeners will want to know, that they have an opportunity to let PSE know about this white knuckle race to zero gas joke by sending an email. So you can email irp@pse.com. Express your opinions about PSE's plan to continue pumping gas pollution into the environment. You might tell them that 18% gas reduction over 22 years is just not good enough. You might tell them that buying carbon allowances is not good enough. You might tell them to shift their gas customers to electricity as soon as they possibly can. So if you want to take that action, email Puget Sound Energy, email address irp@pse.com.
So they're not, they're going to have to tear that, my gas stove out of my cold dead hand. Isn't that what I'm hearing?
they need to reduce, according to the state, they need to reduce their gas business to zero by 2050. That's my understanding. Right. So they're going to leave your stove where it is as long as you want to have it there.
No. Okay.
But
so until 2050, right? And then after that, I better get something else.
You've got another 27 years to enjoy the gas stove. Yeah, there you go.
Start to get to use your solar cooker, Truman.
There you go. Yeah. Well, they make them right here on Vashon. I mean, no, I guess those are charcoal cookers, right?
Yeah, the other thing is, of course, electric induction stoves. That is the newer technology that's coming along. And, you know, you hear on the conservative side of the political fence that, you know, we're coming to take those gas stoves away. I think what's happening, in my opinion, is we're letting people know the indoor air quality health effects of combusting gas in your home. And the fact that childhood asthma rates are significantly higher, it's not clear whether there's a correlation, but the data suggests that there might be. So anyway, all right, well, why don't we move on? Now that we have a seated 118th Congress, and Craig, I'm going to ask if you have that little sound on tape.
I hope so.
We'll give that a try, folks. Bear with us. But now that we have that 118th Congress seated, I'd like to bring us back to one of the speeches made on that late Friday night. So, Craig, if you roll the tape.
Well, it's rolling, but it's not queuing up. Let me just switch this. Tech. I'm the substitute engineer.
Okay. Well, we can go to that next week if we choose.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's I can play it live in the studio here. Let's see here real quick.
Well, see if that'll work.
Well, there we go. No, I always have trouble with the wireless here, and I had not been able to download this, so I apologize. Nope, not able to do that wonderful speech, the alphabet speech that Hakeem Jeffries gave, which was so moving, and I do apologize that I wasn't able to get that loaded. So,
I have another recommendation.
Wait a second.
For you.
We might have a breakthrough.
Benevolence over bigotry. The Constitution over the cold. Democracy over demagogues. Economic opportunity over extremism. Freedom over fascism. Governing over gaslighting. Hopefulness over hatred. Inclusion over isolation. Justice over judicial overreach. Knowledge over kangaroo court. Liberty over limitation. Maturity over Mar-a-Lago. Normalcy over negativity. Opportunity over obstruction. People over politics. Quality of life issues over QAnon. Reason over racism. Substance over slander. Triumph over tyranny. Understanding over ugliness. Voting rights over voter suppression. Working families over the well-connected. Xenial over xenophobia. Yes, we can over you can't do it. And zealous representation over zero-sum confrontation. Always do the right thing by the American people. So let us not grow weary of doing good. For the American people will reap the benefit of the harvest if we do not give up. God bless you, God bless the House, and God bless the United States of America.
I have not heard the whole thing. I only heard the beginning. So that's wonderful.
Well, for those who are wondering what that is, thank you, Craig, for making that happen. That is Hakeem Jeffries, currently now the House Minority Leader, talking about what Democrats do and what they try to avoid. And I don't know about you guys who actually heard it, but it took me about until Mar-a-Lago when I realized it was the alphabet thing was happening. Mm-hmm. So maybe my IQ is just not quite as sharp as it should be. What do you think? What might we expect from Mr. Jeffries in the future based on his current role and his articulate reciting of the alphabet? Truman.
Before we get to that, I have to just give you a recommendation. Look on YouTube for Randy Rainbow's new Speaker of the House video. if you want to have an entertaining few minutes, it is it's beyond belief.
It's really something.
Anyway, sorry.
I'm glad Randy Rainbow is still in business.
Yeah.
What
does it mean? Well, you know, that's a good question. I think Hakeem Jeffries is a great choice for the minority leader. He does seem to be able to talk as well as one can talk to members of the other side. So if there's any chance of finding common ground, I think he may be the one of the best men for the job.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure many of our listeners are heartwarmed to hear that notion that we have that. I do recall, surprisingly, hearing a young senator named Barack Obama some 20 or so years ago give a speech. And after that, the pundits said, you know, we need to watch this guy because there's some potential here. So who knows? Maybe the same will happen of Mr. Jeffries.
Definitely a possibility.
All right. Well, hey, let's jump forward. Next week's Small Talk guest is Steve Hunter, Vashon Mori Island Audubon Vice President and the lead of their legislative advocacy activities. Steve's going to join us to talk about our feathered friends. And so to close out this episode of The Brown Briefly, thank you again, Abel and Tom, for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Right.
It's been wonderful to hear more about the Land Trust. And for Tom, our absent guardian of the galaxy, still doing good work. below the equator. Truman and Craig, I'm Kevin Jones. Hope you all plan to listen next Tuesday for the next edition of the Brown Briefly.
Bye now.